This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And good morning again, and welcome to the Saturday Morning Show with you as we really get into the heart of the county fair season. And starting in August in the Midwest, we'll get into the state fair season. At any rate, we'll be here until 6 o'clock this morning, and Jim Fazell will be joining us to offer his advice on lawns and flowers and vegetable gardens and whatever. He is our specialist in horticulture on the Saturday Morning Show. We're also going to be checking in with the president of the Lake County Fair Board up at Grays Lake, because as we wind down the Kane County Fair this weekend in St. Charles, next week we'll open up the Lake County Fair. And then, of course, Max Armstrong joins us to talk markets this morning. And Max will join us for another special event and report and tribute to a dear friend that many of us in agriculture lost this week, Darius Harms. If you love old farm equipment and old tractors, you had to love Darius Harms. He passed away, and Max will share some thoughts of a very dear friend later on in the program. But Jim Fazell standing by here on the Saturday Morning Show, and we'll join him right after this. It's time for Jim Fazell to join us here on the Saturday Morning Show. And Jim, we're changing your title this week. I've always introduced you as specialist in ornamental horticulture, but since you do trees, lawns, vegetable, and fruit crops, I'm going to change that to consulting horticulturist. Is that okay?
Oh, yes, and that's exactly what I do, and that's what our firm is for. You know, we have a firm that does consulting, and that's what they call us. So that's great. And appreciate that.
All right, very good. Well, a scorcher of a week. Yes. Where are we with the garden season at the moment?
Well, we're in pretty good shape. You know, after being a little bit slow to start, we're at least at the norm for this time of year. And, in fact, the gardens are doing very well. We get a little bit of timely rain. In fact, earlier this week, I think Thursday night it was, we got a little over an inch of rain at our place. And I know there was rain generally all over the place. And with this kind of weather, this scorching, high humidity type of weather, we can expect pop-up thunderstorms. And if we get an inch or so a week, that's fine. That's just exactly what we need. It does keep the lawn green. We've got a little milder weather predicted. Actually, this past week has been historically the hottest week of the year here in Chicagoland. So we can expect, if it isn't next week, the time will come when things are going to be a little more mild. So it gives us a chance to refresh the yard and the garden. You mentioned the lawn a second ago. You need to keep mowing. In some places, the grass isn't growing because it is dry. But you need to mow anyway because the weeds are still growing, whether the grass is or not, and it removes the seed heads so you don't get more weeds. And it evens up the lawn. Even if it's dry and not really green, it looks a lot better if it's neat. And you can do some edging. That's a little easier to do at this time of year when there's when you don't have so much grass growing. It takes you a little less time to get around and do the edging. And if you do have weeds out there, you can dig out the dandelions and the plant. And, you know, I still have an old dandelion digger that was my great-grandfather's. It works. We talked a couple of weeks ago about the grubs and the webworms. You know, I have not seen Japanese beetles or the May beetles or masked chafers this year. I'm beginning to suspect that we didn't have very good survivability of the grubs last winter, that they were killed off by frost that got down deep in the soil. If you have had grubs a lot in the past, you might consider putting down Merit or Grub X, one of those. But, you know, there's one thing about that I'd like to caution. If you have a lawn that has a lot of clover in it, I would be inclined not to use one of these long-range things on that lawn, because there is some indication that they may affect honeybees a little bit. And if you have clover, you're going to have honeybees out there. So until the clover is done blooming, wait to put that stuff on. But in a couple of weeks, you can check your lawn for grubs. If you do have them, you can always use Dilox. That works just perfectly. It kills them right immediately. You don't have to wait for 2 or 3 weeks for it to work. You also need to start making plans for repairing your lawn. Mark out the areas that need to be worked on, because we're only about 3 weeks away from the prime time for starting lawns. That's about the 15th of August. From the 15th of August to the 15th of October is the time to do that. Well, out in the vegetable garden, since I'm a consulting horticulturist, not just ornamental, you want to be sure you pick the produce as it ripens. And in this hot weather, if you go out and pick the beans today, you better check tomorrow, because the ones that were too small today may have already gotten big enough, especially if you have some moisture. On those crops like the tomatoes and peppers and so forth that have been in for quite a while and you intend to keep them in there, you might consider side dressing with about a pound of fertilizer per 100 square feet, something like 10-10-10, good old farm fertilizer. And, of course, pull out the plants that are finished, compost them, and it's time to start putting those transplants in that you started a few weeks ago to replace the stuff that's come out. The coles and the late tomatoes, greens, and so forth. And you can also continue seeding the beets and the carrots and the greens. And with this hot, dry weather, you want to be sure to cover each row that you plant with a board to make sure that seed isn't scorched and dried out as it's trying to germinate. Hoe out the weeds. They always grow. Watch out for pests. And when you see them, you want to treat with the proper controls immediately because, again, in this hot weather, they are temperature sensitive and problems like insects will pop up and they will get out of hand very quickly. You want to make a record of what you're doing out in your garden. We talk about this all the time. I have a journal that I've been keeping for years. It's just an old spiral notebook, and I just jot down stuff in that every year. And it's interesting. One of the things you need to do is make sure if you're going to plan rotations in your garden that you draw a plan of where the stuff is this year, so when you come up to next year, you can't wonder where the tomatoes were. You'll know exactly where they were. You need to record your successes and your failures, indicate the weather. We've had good weather this year. Note the varieties doing well, dates of harvest, and so forth. And one of the things you want to do is to jot down where you got the seed for these things. A few years ago, I bought seed from a seed company that I'd never bought from before, and when that stuff started growing, I am absolutely sure that the varieties that I bought were not the things that I got because they didn't grow the way they were supposed to. Anyway, let's talk just a little bit about the flower garden. It's time to begin working on the flower garden. One of the things you need to do is cut back the leggy annuals. They will regrow and they'll be renewed and improved for blooming the rest of the season. And there you also can side dress with fertilizer. A little harder to get the fertilizer in among the annuals unless you cut them back a little bit to start with. Perennials, they're natives, and they're going to get leggy if the soil is too rich. Many of them are natives, but they are used to growing in rather infertile soils, and if you fertilize them, they are going to get too tall and skinny, and they're going to fall over. So in your perennial garden, be very careful before you put any fertilizer on. Edge those where the lawn and the garden meet. And you need to be prepared to begin dividing your overgrown perennials. Late summer is the time to do that, but you need to stake them out and label them so you know what they are while they're in bloom, so that when you go out and the blooms are no longer on there, you're going to know what you have in what place and where to do it. And again, start a drawing of your garden the way it is to scale. If you're going to do some revisions, you need to do that. Make a revised plan before you start going out to move those things and measure those plants and see how big they actually get, because one of the things that happens is that perennials get far too big and the garden gets too crowded too quickly. So with a little pre-planning, you can avoid that. You know, perennial gardens are never finished. They're not ends, but journeys. So I always say, be prepared to enjoy the ride.
So what does a consulting horticulturist give his bride when it's her birthday? Does she get a radish or a head of lettuce, or what does she get?
a drive through the woods to see the tree. She's a plant person as well. And one of the things that she likes, first of all, a bouquet of flowers. When Jane and I were dating 40 years ago, believe it or not, I always brought her flowers, and she had a house full of plants. So she's been a horticulturist herself, even though she's not trained, but she's a good amateur horticulturist. And she's been my right hand and my helper now for 40 years. I won't tell you how old she is, but it's been wonderful, and she's been a lot of help over the years. Of course, you and Gloria know her, too.
Yep.
And I just wanted to mention on the air here that how much she's really appreciated.
Well, let's wish Jane a happy birthday and celebrate and have a good time and eat a radish or two. And, Jim, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, Orin. Look forward to it.
Jim Fizell, our consulting horticulturist here on the Saturday Morning Show. 19 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, and as I mentioned earlier, still working in our Arizona studio this morning. But later today, we'll be flying back to the Midwest, and I have to talk for a moment about a very exciting day tomorrow. The Southern Wisconsin Regional Airport at Janesville, Wisconsin, rolling out the red carpet for a handful of wartime planes that move into Janesville for the Heavy Bombers Plane Show ahead of the Experimental Aircraft Association's Air Venture in Oshkosh. They'll be heading out of Janesville in time for that event next week. But they're going to have a B-29 Super Fortress, B-17 Flying Fortress, B-25 Mitchell, and quite a few other airplanes that served in World War II and the Vietnam War. And the most exciting thing to me is I'm going to get a ride in the B-17 Flying Fortress, the workhorse of the Air Force in the European theater in World War II. So I'm really looking forward to that. Hope the weather doesn't interfere, because I'll get a ride. I think they go up to about 3,000 feet, fly over the countryside, and the flight probably will last about 30 minutes or so. But looking forward to that a great deal. And the show is open to the public. If you want to take a look at these airplanes, the workhorses of our military over the past 50, 60, 70 years, head to Janesville, Wisconsin, the airport this morning. Or next week, you can head to Oshkosh, Wisconsin for the Air Venture Show. So at any rate, wanted to share that with you. And if weather allows and we get the flight done, we'll talk about it next week here on the Saturday Morning Show. In the meantime, county fair season is in full swing, and we watch the Kane County Fair at St. Charles go through today and tomorrow, its final day. And then next week, more county fairs coming up, and we'll talk about one of them when we continue on the Saturday Morning Show. As I've been mentioning for the past week or two, it is county fair season. We just winding up the Kane County Fair in St. Charles this weekend, and next week we look north to the Lake County Fair. With us on the line, John Brodzik, who is the Fair Board President. And John, let's begin with the dates and the hours of your fair.
All right. We run from July 27th through the 31st. Our hours on Wednesday and Thursday are from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m., Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to midnight, and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
And as I look over your program, a lot of events that every county fair has, but some that they don't. You have a rodeo at the Lake County Fair.
Yes, sir. We've brought the rodeo back. It had a couple-year hiatus, and it's been back with us for the last three, and it's very well attended.
What about some of the other highlights on the program? I know you pick a county fair queen.
Oh, yeah. We pick a Miss Lake County Fair, a Little Miss, and a Junior Miss. So we got them all covered here.
When will that happen?
That will happen Wednesday, July 27th.
Okay. So what about some of the other program events that would attract people to your fair?
On Thursday, we have a truck and tractor pull. We run a antique class, so all the Farm Heritage Association guys can show off their tractors pulling, and then all the guys with the fancy ones come in and they run theirs all through as well. And then on Friday, we have our demolition derby, and it's also our Salute the Troops Day, so we have a fireworks show at 9:45.
And Saturday?
Saturday, we have two shows of rodeo, one at 2 and one at 7, and we do 9 full events with that rodeo.
And then Sunday?
Sunday we have Crash Fest. We have Demolition Derby, and we have multiple different heats culminating with the trailer races.
You got a full schedule. And when I first saw your schedule and saw the Demolition Derby Friday night, I thought, well, that's strange. Most county fairs have Demolition Derby the last night, but you have two nights of it, so you do have it the last night.
Yes, yes. We have two nights of it. We're daring here.
Yes, you are. Let's talk about agriculture. Let's talk about 4-H. Let's talk about FFA. What goes on at the fair?
Well, like it. Every county fair, it's an important part of our fair. We have livestock judging every day, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, leading up to our auction on Saturday, which is at 2 p.m. And then on Sunday, we have something interesting. We have a master showmanship competition. So all of the senior kids that won their showmanship in their respective animal come in and they compete against one another, and they have to actually demonstrate showmanship with every single animal.
That's a great feature. Now, is it all species or just one?
Yeah. So we'll do swine, we'll do beef, we'll do sheep, goat, and then we throw in a chicken just for fun.
Oh, really? So you have, hey, I've never seen a chicken showmanship contest, but that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, especially to see some of the kids that have never handled one before.
And I assume carnival rides and all the good eating that we find at every county fair will be at the Lake County Fair.
Anything you can deep fry is deep fried here in Lake County.
Okay. And, of course, and you're relatively new on your fairgrounds, so for people who haven't gone to the fair in 8 or 10 years, you don't want them going to the old fairgrounds. Where are you now?
We are at 1060 East Peterson Road in Grays Lake still.
Still Grays Lake.
Yeah,
all right.
A couple miles south of the old place.
Okay. And I've been there. Great fairgrounds. You did a beautiful job of moving and building a new fairgrounds, and you've done a good job. So once again, the days next week?
July 27th through July 31st.
Well, we wish you good weather, and we wish you another successful fair, and thanks for keeping a great part of Americana alive. We appreciate that very much, John.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
John Brodzik, who is the president of the Lake County Fair Board in Grays Lake, Illinois. And Max and I will be at that Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa, all 3 days at noontime. We'll be there with the band, and we'll be at the ADM tent because that has become our home away from home for several years now at the Farm Progress Show. So if you're going to be in Boone, Iowa, be there at noontime on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and come on up and say hello. As a matter of fact, you know, both Max and I are authors now, and so we'll have a book or two along, and we'll be awarding some folks in the audience my book and Max's book. Mine is You Can't Dream Big Enough, and Max's is Memories from the Heartland. Well, we're at the 5:30 mark here on the Saturday morning show, and this is Chicago's very own WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Roger, you have a good day. You have a good weekend, and it's interesting to note that here in the desert in Scottsdale, Arizona, we're only 10 degrees warmer right now than you are in Chicago. So that's the weather difference between the desert and the Midwest. Well, welcome back to the Saturday Morning Show. Welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, and this week I break one of my rules and talk politics on Samuelson Says. But before that, The people at Wink Products Company have been working since 1947 to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products. That means products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. This professional strength formula dissolves the ugly rust stains on white sinks, toilet bowls, but also color-fast fabrics and carpets. This little brown bottle has been around for 69 years. It's still number one. To learn where to find all of the quality Wink products, check them out at wink.com, W-H-I-N-K.com. Now my thoughts on Samuelson Says. In all the years that I've been doing Samuelson Says, I have never devoted a sermon to politics. But I'm going to break that rule this week because in emails and in conversations around the country, many of you have said, how are you dealing with this election? Who are you going to vote for? Well, I will not answer the second question, but I will talk about how I feel about this election. I have been voting in presidential elections since 1952. And I can honestly say this will be the most difficult election I have ever experienced. I know this will make some of you angry, but my opinion of the two major candidates, one is an arrogant liar, the other is an arrogant egotist who cannot communicate without attack or profanity, and the third one, who lasted quite a while, would give away everything in this country that politicians before him haven't given away. So what does that leave us as we go to the polls? I'm afraid a lot of people will be voting against rather than for. But indeed, you have to vote. It's part of the privilege that people die for over the past 240 years. And we must exercise the right and the privilege to vote. From the standpoint of agriculture, both candidates concern me because I don't think they know or understand a great deal about the importance of the most basic industry in this country, producers of food, fiber, and energy, and how important the industry is in our world trade balance. And I'm particularly bothered by their attitudes on trade, because they're not only talking about not signing any new ones, including the Trans-Pacific, they're talking about breaking up old ones that we know work, like NAFTA. So it doesn't leave me with much of a choice. But I did recently hear on radio an interview with the Libertarian candidates, two former governors, Johnson and Weld. I liked what I heard from them. They understand business. They understand trade. They understand the social activity we're going through. I might vote Libertarian, but then I might not, too. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks, and we're at 20 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show, and Max Armstrong will join us to talk markets when we continue on the Saturday morning show.
This weekend, we're visiting about markets with Naomi Bloom from Stuart Peterson. West Bend, Wisconsin is where the worldwide headquarters of Stuart Peterson is located. This busy market season, as we're watching price gyrations here to the developing crops, where are you to begin with on this corn crop? And I ask that because I've talked with a lot of growers in recent days, some of whom cite some limited damage that they've had in terms of storms coming through, wind damage, there's some hail damage. But as I often point out, when you get those storms, there's almost always beneficial precipitation. And we're in the midst of pollination. It's already happened for a big chunk of the corn crop. How do you assess what's going on right at this moment with our corn?
Well, when we talk with our clients, what we're not hearing is complaining. And so when we're not hearing complaining, then we need to assume that things are pretty good. And sure, there's the little snippets that come up about hail damage or things like that. But for the most part, like you said, the rain is coming with the heat. And overall, clients are saying that their crop is looking really good. Some people are saying it's the best it's ever looked. Some are quietly saying it's going to be their bin buster. They just, you know, don't want to say how good it really is because of market conditions and prices going lower. But it's a really big crop out there. And, you know, the most recent crop rating is 76% good to excellent nationwide. Iowa and Illinois are over 80% good to excellent. It is a big crop.
We've shifted the Corn Belt a little bit in recent years, so there's more corn in the Dakotas. Mm-hmm. That has not pollinated yet, has it?
Not to my knowledge, no. I think it's just getting started, and even where I live in Wisconsin, some of the fields have not pollinated yet. So that is something to be watching for as we go into August, because any late heat would still affect those regions in terms of pollination. But for right now, the market is just assuming that this heat dome that's sitting over us has some rain events associated with it. And so they're thinking that the crop can withstand a few days of 90 to 100 degree temperatures because there's a little bit of a cooling for the following week. Now, if that changes Sunday night or into Monday morning and they're taking the rain out, well, we'll be right back up in terms of prices.
A friend of mine who is a seed corn salesman also and watches developments closely said, you know, these fields are staying hot at night. He said, that's one thing that kind of gets my attention is when you've got temperatures that camp out there well into the upper 70s and even low 80s, that can be a concern to yield, too. So we're going to watch this closely. Weekly crop bulletins, as you pointed out, have been very, very strong. Historically, in July, beginning in July, we'd start to see the corn rating fall, right, on into August. But that didn't happen last year.
Right. So right now what we're seeing it is for 3 weeks in a row staying phenomenal, 76% good to excellent. And you're right. Normally this time of year it starts to stagger back down a little bit. And we're ahead of where we are from last year, obviously. And last year we had a cooler summer and just, you know, just a nice growing season. So it's really remarkable that the crop is as good as it says. Now, something that you just mentioned about the hotter nights is important. Because in 2010, the crop was rated at 72% good to excellent this time of year. But the last week of July and the first few weeks of August, it was so hot at night, the temperatures never got back below 70 degrees. And actually that year, the yield was 5% below trend line. So you're totally right. Nighttime temperatures can play effect into this market. So we have to be watching that for the coming weeks.
Have you formulated a corn yield idea at this point? Are you looking at a number that you think is pretty much on target in terms of corn yield? Here we are yet, 3 weeks ahead, I guess, of a major crop report with the first actual field estimate on corn size.
I would say that sticking right now with the USDA number of 168 is prudent because of the potential heat that could be coming up over the next couple of weeks. If we end up having it truly be cooler next week, then you're going to start to hear the market talking about yield at 170 or 171. But if that heat stays in there, then the conversation of 168 will stay in effect for a couple weeks. And then we'll see, though, if it would be a number that gets reduced over time, depending on the heat in August. But the number right now is 168.
Shifting attention to soybeans, certainly we have critical days ahead yet. What's your grasp of August weather from what you're hearing of the weather forecast and what it would mean subsequently to soybean yields?
What I've been hearing with weather is that it's still up in the air and that anything can happen yet. And you come into work one morning and the weather forecast is such, and then by noon it's totally different. So the market is going to trade every single weather fluctuation out there. The crop right now is rated, I believe, at 71% good to excellent, but it doesn't matter at all right now because the August weather is so critical that there's no parallel to draw between good to excellent ratings right now with what August can bring, because that will trump whatever the crop rating is right now.
We have seen that repeatedly, have we not, that a well-placed, well-timed rain in the month of August just makes a difference of night and day in soybean yields.
Oh, absolutely. We've seen it in years where that can be the peak of the market if the rain comes through at just the right time during the portion of August where it's needed. So weather is critical, and be ready for more volatility. You're going to see 30 cents up, 30 cents down every other day, just depending on the weather forecast.
Your advice there, I think, is good, is it not? To be ready. Be ready for volatility from the standpoint of the opportunity that can be presented there.
That's a great point. And, you know, when you say that and when you see it on the rallies, make sure that you're still working on those cash sales for anything that you have old crop. And if the beans at all can get a little bit of a spurt higher, it'll take the corn with it. And so that's going to be important for guys who still have corn in the bin, because right now your only hope for a rally is related to August heat and the soybean market moving higher. That's kind of the only hope. So on those rallies, be pricing out more sales because it would take dramatic 90-plus degree weather in August for 2 or 3 weeks with no rain in order to get the market prices back to where I think we're all secretly wanting them to be. And right now that may not be a reality unless the weather is truly that hot and dry.
The big fund traders, they haven't totally bailed on beans yet, have they?
Not totally, but last week they did reduce their short position, and that was the first, or their, excuse me, their long position, and that was the first time that we saw that in, boy, months. So we have to keep watching that. They're watching this weather forecast as much as everybody else. And if it turns out to be hot, they're going to come back in full bore and be buyers. But if it turns out to be good enough weather, then we're going to see them follow the seasonal pattern and then start to sell off their short, their long positions, and then we'll see the prices work a little lower as well.
What do you make of the resurgent talk here that China is backing off, that China's economy is slowing, that China's purchases are slowing? You know, we hear that every now and then, every few months, that, oh, my goodness, you know, that's not the kind of economic growth that they were experiencing. And then Oil World, with its report a few days ago, stoked that talk once more. How do you sort that out?
Well, here's my take on that. Oil World said that they're going to be reducing their imports by 2.8 million tons. And so what that means to me is that they're just trying to reduce inventory internally. So it's not that they're not needing the demand. They're just trying to get rid of the supply that they have at home because they're thinking the United States is going to save the day. We're going to have a great crop. They're going to then be able to buy cheaper at harvest. They're going to be able to then refill their internal supplies at a cheaper value. They're just moving inventory and being good managers of their internal crop and their internal supply. But they'll be back, and they'll be buying, just waiting for a cheaper price.
You've touched on something that we've noticed so often. They are truly shrewd traders, aren't they?
They seem to be. It would be fascinating to be a fly on the wall over there, wouldn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
As we take a look at yields here going on into the fall, is there a tendency, and especially I'm thinking about the soybean yield, as we start to get a grasp of that in September, does that number tend to climb as the year goes on?
That is a great question, and I'm not sure. I can't tell you off the top of my head, so I'm not sure.
It occurred to me that in the past, you know, we have a kind of a soft grasp on that when the first ratings, first crop estimates come out, and it seems like in the past two or three years, I have nothing to back this up, but in the back of my feeble mind, it seems like we've added to the yield as the season has gone on.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me from the standpoint of that just keeps the story with bigger supplies and cheaper prices for everybody in the world. So it does seem like if the crop is deemed as sufficient and good enough, that the supplies continue to grow on those spreadsheets and the yield grows on the spreadsheets from the USDA. That is something to keep watch of in the coming weeks and months.
Can we expect a little volatility in that time frame after the August crop report and toward the end of August simply because of the crop tours that'll be out there and that tends to whipsaw the market around some years?
Yeah, that I think is good fodder for day traders. But right now, with the big money in the market, unfortunately, seems to put more factor or opinion in the USDA reports versus the crop tours. So the crop tours might be a good precursor for what the USDA reports are going to be saying in the following months, and it's going to be really good for market news, day traders, and things like that. And yes, some last minute volatility in August. But if again they're on that crop tour and the yields are really looking good or the pod counts are there, then we're probably going to see the price slide then into the end of September. And that's when corn seasonally usually finds its low, end of September or early October. And then corn, I think, is going to be on sale. That'll be a buy.
It's good to see you, Naomi. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Naomi Bloom with Stuart Peterson Group.
While grain prices have had their ups and downs on a daily basis the past couple of weeks, pretty much the same thing happening in the cattle markets. And we saw that happen again this week with the cattle going up, going down. And that creates a real problem. Here in Arizona, most of the ranchers produce what we call feeder cattle, cattle that move into feedlots for finishing to end up as steaks and hamburgers across the country. And they're very concerned right now about the price of the cattle market because at this point they're losing money on those cattle that they have on the ranch. And last Friday, after the markets closed, the U.S. Department of Agriculture issued the July Cattle on Feed report. And that report showed that placement of cattle into feedlots in June went up 3%. at 1,525,000 head of cattle, and that is, well, a little bit ahead of last year, but it was below expectations of the cattle traders. The USDA put the feedlot cattle supply as of July 1st at 10,356,000 head. That's up 1% from a year ago. That, too, is below expectations. And the government said the number of cattle sold to packers rose 9% in June from a year ago. That, too, still below expectations. And so one analyst said, based on the numbers that we got in that feedlot report last Friday, we could see cattle futures moving higher when the market opens on Monday. The cash hog market been going through the same ups and downs, but mostly down. As a matter of fact, 10 days of lower cash hog prices. And one dealer in Iowa said, it's been brutal. Talking about, well, the 12-day decline in cash hog prices. He said, hopefully we can limit the losses, but some packers are pretty well bought for the next week or two. Market's always a challenge and always interesting to keep an eye on. But next week, there is concern about what's happening with cattle futures at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And hopefully next week we'll have someone on from the CME group to talk about that cattle contract at the Merc. So we're working on that for next week. Well, this week, agriculture lost a good friend here in Illinois and across the country because he was well-known, Darius Harms, who had a major role in establishing a couple of important shows dealing with antique agricultural equipment and tractors, the I&I show at Penfield, Illinois, and then the every other year Half Century of Progress show in Illinois, the same time that the Farm Progress show is here in our state. And Darius passed away earlier this week. The funeral services will be held on Monday, and while Max and I both knew Darius very well, I think Max, who talked to Darius often, sort of looked at Darius as his second father. So I've asked Max to join us this morning to talk a little bit about Darius Harms.
The late Paul Harvey back in the day would have said, partly personal, as he delivered a story about something or someone near and dear to him. Well, my admission to you on this broadcast is it's close to being all personal. The obituary in the Illinois newspaper said the 78-year-old farmer was a lifelong resident of his community and a lifelong member of his church. The man helped start the State Tractor Pullers Association, was a longtime member of an antique tractor club, and helped start an antique tractor show. And while very well written, the obituary about my longtime friend Darius Harms seems like a gross understatement of his life and his reach into others' lives. There's a chapter of my book, Stories from the Heartland, devoted to Darius Harms, and I refer to him as my best friend, after my wife Linda. But I quickly add that 10,000 other people would likely say the same thing about Mr. Harms. He managed to meet so many people, whether it was from the seat of his tractor or at a farm show such as Louisville and Decatur, or while riding around in his pickup truck at some event. And as he's remembered this weekend of his funeral visitation, Darius will likely be described as a great teacher. Exchange students from farms in other nations continued to learn back home in their native lands long after they left the Harms farm, because he didn't stop teaching them. On the phone in the middle of the night from his farm in Illinois, Darius would talk with friends in faraway places like Belgium and England and Germany and Australia. And before the phone could cool down from use in his hand, he'd call this broadcaster, driving down the expressway into Chicago, sometimes to correct the radio announcer about some tidbit of misinformation that might have been shared with the audience. Upon learning of the passing of Darius Harms, I shared this week. Best friends are hard to come by, Most of us can easily count them on one hand if we're that lucky, especially a friend who will lecture you, tease you, mentor you, annoy you, make you laugh so hard, and let you share in unforgettable family experiences, and a friend who isn't at all ashamed to hug you and say, "I love you, buddy."
Thank you very much, Max. Nicely done. And funeral services scheduled for Monday. Darius Harms, who was a friend to everybody and who loved old tractors and farm equipment. As a matter of fact, when they restored the Farmall F-20, that is the tractor I grew up on in Wisconsin back in the 40s and 50s, the people who did it, the tractor club that Darius belonged to, and as a result, that Farmall F-20 still goes on display at some of the shows around the country. So, we'll miss him, but boy, we'll not miss his spirit. And, you know, we talked earlier to the president of a county fair board, and that's the great thing to me about rural America. County fairs happen. Antique farm shows happen. All of this happens with volunteers like Darius, like John, the president of the Lake County Fair Board, and that's what makes rural America, I think, so great. The events that take place because people get together and say, well, let's do this. Let's do a farmer's market. Let's do a county fair. Let's do a festival to salute agriculture. And they do it, and they do it very well. So with that, we're going to take our leave here on this Saturday morning. We'll continue to watch the weather because that is going to be a factor for humans, for livestock, and for crops in the coming days. And so far, as you heard Max in his conversation with Naomi this morning, we're looking at what could be a bin-buster crop this year, barring weather catastrophes between now and harvest. So thank you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on the Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.